Okay, we continue. Hour number three, vaping. Out of the news, but the statistics are not encouraging. So I thought I would ask Henry Nyman if he'd come back tonight, if he felt there was a reason to do an update. He said, absolutely. There's more news, and we're just scratching the tip of the iceberg here. This vaping story is going to get a lot worse before it gets better. Henry, welcome back. Thanks for being here. There are a lot of people vaping, and some of whom listen to this program.
Yeah, I know. We got a few call-ins, and we might make some progress on one that was talking about the lead soldering in the devices and the high temperatures, and the FDA is definitely taking a look at that. So we'll see what they come up with. They've actually said, and so has the CDC, that they're going to be looking at the vape itself and see what's actually in it. And I've mentioned in the past that I think the temperature is a significant factor. And the newer devices, Juul filed a patent in 2016 and issued in 2017. And for the THC, which accounts for the majority of the cases, about 13% of the cases are nicotine only, and the rest either are THC or THC and nicotine. So most of the cases are THC, so I'm going to try to make the argument that all of the cases are THC, and that all of the 13% that say nicotine only are all lying. So there's data that refutes that, including urine tests. And so it does seem to be in both categories, but it's more common in the THC. And the THC, because it's more of an oil-based kind of compound, the boiling point of the they call it vegetable glycerin is higher. That's the one that's 554 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right.
So so they're going to tend to use do the vaping at a higher temperature, and that would set things up for different metals that are in the device itself to because the heat inside the device would put it into the vape that they would then take into their lungs, which they're also coating with oil. So that's a little bit of the background on what might be driving the outbreak. But right now, I was going to concentrate on, how, what the numbers are looking like. Every Thursday, the CDC updates their website, and I've been trying to kind of keep up with them by going to the state sites and getting kind of a preview of what's going to show up on Thursday based upon what the states reported. They're all over the place as far as when they update. Most of them update on Thursday or Friday, but there's some that do it during the week. Nobody really does it on weekends, but so you can kind of see the numbers creeping up, and that's why I knew this week the numbers that came out, the number of cases increased from 1080 to 1299. So that's an increase of 219. And what's starting to get people's attention is the deaths. The deaths went up from, they're 26 this week, and they were 18 last week. So they went up by 8. And if you go
that's a factor of 25%.
Yeah. And if you go through the numbers for the last month or so, the going back to like 918, the cases were 530, and then the next week they went up to 805, so that increased by 275. Mm-hmm. And then the following week it went up to 280, so that was 275 again, and then this week is 1299, so that's an increase of 219. So it's been above 200 each week, although this week is a little bit below the last 2 weeks. And this is kind of consistent with what they said last week. What they've been doing is holding teleconferences on Thursday. And they kind of preview what the numbers are and take questions from the media. And sometimes there's a little bit more information that it gets clarified. A lot of types of questions are just trying to get the numbers a little harder so they can write their stories and make sure they understand, you know, what is in the report that shows up. But yeah, right now it's getting kind of, they're used to it. So, a lot of the numbers aren't changing that much. The deaths, for instance, last week, the average age of the deaths they had up to, that point, was 49.5, which was quite a bit different than the age profile of the ones that are actually showing up in the hospital. And because in those cases, like 2/3 of the cases are between 18 and 35, and then another 17% or so are under 18. So there's only about 17% that are over 75. Yet the, I'm sorry, over 35, but the average age is quite a bit higher, 49.5. This week, the average came down slightly as to 49. And, I think most of that decline was based upon was driven by the first case in, New York, who was a 17-year-old and, that is the youngest case that's been reported anyway. And he was in the Bronx, and he was New York's first case. And he probably brought those numbers down a little bit. But what kind of stood out, like I said, was the deaths. If you go back a month, there had been 7 deaths. And then that went up to 12 the next week. And then it went up to 18 the week after, and now it's up to 26. So this last week it went up 8, before it was 6 and 5. So that's steadily been increasing. And,
hold on, please. We don't know how widespread the lung injuries are in this country. We have millions of vapors who have been doing it for years and years, who seem to be healthy. We don't know. This is a huge unknown. Still, at this point, we may end up with thousands of dead and hundreds of thousands of lung injuries. We may not have anywhere near that. We don't know. That's the most important point. So until we know, I'm still urging people to please suspend vaping for now. Just hold on. Let us try and find out.
Well, the epi curve kind of gives some clues. And, you know, what some people that are, that would take issue with, you know, how dangerous their situation is they would use what you just said, that, vaping's been around for about 11 years or so, I think. And, the argument is that, well, you didn't have this explosion of cases and deaths until, really most of the activity is, you know, started taking off over the summer and then got a lot of attention, you know, not that long ago, a little over a month ago, things started to really take off. And so their argument is that it's not smoking nicotine. And some actually still say there are 0 nicotine cases, which,
0.
So that requires that, you know, all 13% that say they were nicotine only, were all lying. And, I mean, it's not, you know, a real credible argument because, you know, not a lot had been tested in urine, but they, you know, the small numbers they did test, they did find cases that did test negative, and they found you know, a small percentage might be lying, but not all, not 100%. And so, if you've got even a few cases that are, nicotine only, then that kind of blows a hole in the argument that, it's all due to, street drugs, that something's been added to it, and those additives are, you know, like the vitamin E acetate, which is probably the most common, that's what's driving it, and that people are getting the street drugs, and those that are getting it, you know, just doing nicotine really don't have a problem. Now they are, the difficulty with that argument is, like I say, some have tested negative for THC. Some of them just don't fit the profile there. There are people that are relatively old. They've been longtime smokers, and they're basically switched to vaping nicotine to satisfy their nicotine addiction, but to, you know, reduce the cigarette smoke that they've been taking earlier in their life. So those cases are kind of the ones that the pitch is being made for vaping, that it's a way to get off the cigarettes. And so to assume that all of them that fit that profile are all lying about saying that they are really doing what is, you know, the purported utility of this new technology. It's really unlikely that especially the older ones that are kind of lifetime smokers. And the damage is the same in all of these. There was a study done at Mayo Clinic, and they were pathologists that kind of looked under the microscope, slides. And they saw chemical burns is how they characterized what they saw. And it didn't matter whether they were, nicotine or they were THC. They saw the same in both. And in fact, they had a couple of their cases were like from over a year ago. So those were cases where, the whole idea that there's these street, contaminants were in there because those were before there really was a whole lot of THC being used in vaping. So in any event, it does seem to be both groups, and it does seem to be more common in the THC. But like I said, the THC requires a higher temperature, and that higher temperature
I get it. All right, is what's the people going on. Dr. Nyman, the people who died, what kind of deaths are we talking about here? Are there differences in the profile of how they end their lives? Are there heart attacks, or are they just, do they suffocate from within?
No. They kind of come in with almost flu-like symptoms. They might have some gastrointestinal kind of issues, and they have a little bit of trouble breathing. They might have a cough. We'll get to the flu season. They initially come in and they present a lot like flu patients, and then they're told they've got bronchitis or it's just something that's temporary, and they go ahead and send them home, and then like 4 or 5 or 6 days later, they're back in the hospital, and the condition hasn't improved. It usually has gotten worse, where they're having more and more trouble breathing and catching their breath, and it feels like they got a weight on their chest, and then they start to develop pneumonia, and they get this liquid in their lungs, and and they keep on progressing. And so the ones that die usually end up getting on ECMO machines, which are, you know, like heart lung machines that are essentially putting air back in that's been oxygenated to try to get their oxygen levels up. Their blood oxygen levels are low. And so they try to force oxygen into their lungs. And then it's, you know, it's a lot like the patients that kind of die from, you know, H5N1 type of a thing where they go and they get on these and they're on these ECMO machines forever. And eventually they end up just dying because their lungs give out. So the issue is, whether the deaths are kind of going up and whether, this epi curve suggests that, well, they got to smoke for, a couple of years or so. Most of them, you know, didn't just start smoking. Most of the cases I've seen have been smoking for, 1.5 to 3 years or so. These are the younger cases anyway. So they haven't really been vaping that long, but it's not like they, you know, started vaping and a week later they're in the hospital or a month later they're in the hospital. They've been smoking for a little while. And it could very well just be slowly damaging their lungs. So like you say, their lungs may not be in good shape, although they haven't gotten to this critical point where they feel they have to go into the hospital. I'll give you one case that I actually know of secondhand that somebody that, one of my daughters knows that he started and he had, what was diagnosed as bronchitis he never really went into the doctor, but he had bronchitis for 6 weeks. And, you know, he did stop vaping, I don't think he had been vaping that long. And whether the bronchitis was really due to the vaping or not, I don't know. But that would be an example of somebody that vaped, never got so sick that they had to, you know, I don't think he saw the doctor, but it would be unusual to have bronchitis for 6 weeks, and that's essentially what happened. And he just smoked nicotine. So there is probably a lot of people out there that have had some symptoms, but not serious enough to go see the doctor. And what their worry is that, yeah, we've talked about this before as to how many teenagers vape. And the idea is that a lot of them, the ones that are showing up at the hospital now are kind of the leading edge. These are the cases that, you know, have probably been smoking more than for longer. And they've had enough time for their lungs to deteriorate enough for them to actually go to the hospital or go to the doctor, followed by going to the hospital. And there could be a very big wave that's following up on this. That was one of the other areas where there are warnings that are coming out. And I wouldn't be surprised if the CDC holds a telebriefing tomorrow or next week and starts discussing the issue of the flu and vaping overlapping. That produces potential problems for a number of reasons. One is the presentation's the same. So it's possible that somebody that's been vaping and gets flu-like symptoms and goes in and sees the doctor, and the doctor tests for influenza and they're, you know, like influenza A positive. They'll just assume that the symptoms they got are due to the flu, and in part they're correct. But they're starting to warn doctors that even if they're positive on a flu test, that you should find out what their vaping history is. Because there are some examples. There was one that was written up in, I think it was Reuters recently, and they talked about a patient that actually didn't have the flu. He had another respiratory virus. He had the metapneumovirus. And he had that, and he was a vapor. And he was, you know, very, very sick for, I think they said 17 days, and he finally did recover. But it was like his lungs had been damaged enough that when they got the in this case, metapneumovirus infection on top of, in the condition his lungs were in, that he didn't do well at all, you know. And it took a long time to recover. Metapneumovirus usually isn't that serious, and he was seriously ill. And so the worry is that that's going to be even more dramatic with the upcoming flu season. And, you know, as your listeners probably know, the influenza is, it's currently flu season in the Northern Hemisphere, and it's exactly, 6 months apart in the Southern Hemisphere. So I can start talking about the flu right after the break. You want to take
a
break
now? Yeah, we got flu, and let me just mention to all of you, now is the time to, and I know a lot of you don't have the disposable income that you'd like to have, but buy yourself a bottle or two of Allison C and put it in the medicine cabinet. Keep it safe. Keep it ready. Because if you get sick this winter, you're going to want to have that. You don't want to wait 4 or 5 days to order it and then have it on hand. Allison C. Back in a minute. So, Henry, if you're a vapor out there listening to you and this program, how should you feel? What should you do? What would your advice and counsel be for them?
Well, they're probably not vaping, but I would say that would be number one, and number two, that, with regard to flu, if they do have flu-like symptoms and they, end up going to see a doctor because they feel really bad and they, take a flu test and find out that they've got the flu, they should, let the doctor know their history that they have, they have vaped whatever. I mean, they should probably tell them what they vape. You know, they're not going to arrest them from the doctor. They're taking THC. But the doctor should be aware of that type of history because, usually, even if you take an x-ray, the pneumonia kind of develops when you're, really feeling very poorly. So when you initially go in there and you've got a cough and you don't feel that well and you're a little bit short of breath, you might not really have a positive x-ray, but within a few days, it'll develop and you will be able to see it on an x-ray. So, the users should make their the doctors aware if they're going in there. And even if they do test positive for the flu, they should keep in mind that, you know, they may get over the flu, but they may not really feel a whole lot better. And that's because it's a second insult to their lungs. They've already got some damage from the vaping. And then when they throw the virus on top of that, then it could be very difficult because, you know, their lungs are not really exchanging oxygen that well, so they have trouble breathing without an infection. And then when they throw the infection on top, you know, even once the infection clears, it's the damage to the lungs could, you know, kind of, you know, build upon itself. You know, you start developing the fluids, and you got the macrophages, and they're trying to gobble things up, and you got an immune system that may start attacking your lungs, so they're kind of confused on all the debris, et cetera. So, okay. So you should definitely do that. And just to give an idea why this is a concern is that usually, as I was saying right before the break, the southern hemisphere has their winter in the northern hemisphere summer. And so, this past summer for the northern hemisphere, the southern hemisphere had a very bad flu outbreak, and it was like H3N2. And H3N2 is what's caused problems in the past, and part of the reason for that is there's a difference in a glycosylation site. There's a sugar residue that gets put on the outside of the virus. And if the virus is grown in eggs, it basically puts the sugar on. And if it's grown in mammalian cells, it doesn't. Uh-huh. And the vaccines out there, especially for the seniors, is generally a higher dose, but it is grown in eggs. And there are some issues with respect to how good that virus is because it doesn't look quite the same as the virus that's circulating in humans, which are obviously mammals. And so there's a newer version that's actually grown in dog kidney cells. So it's grown in mammalian cells. And so it's got the same glycosylation pattern that the virus circulating from humans to humans. And that, that particular vaccine's a lot more in use this year, so there's a lot more of it available. Right. It's called two-cell vax.
Let me follow up on my earlier question about people who would be logically concerned about having possibly damaged their lungs. I'm not saying that people should go out and have a biopsy, but at what point do they do something like that? You've got millions of people who've been doing this who have every reason to be afraid right now or concerned or worried. Right. Maybe some don't. But, I mean, a biopsy is... Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that some don't, and they may not be quite as at risk because they're doing nicotine. And nicotine is like 13% of the cases. But... yeah, you know, like I said, you go on Twitter, there's a group there that's basically, you know, arguing that this is all overblown, this is an illicit drug problem, and it really has nothing to do with nicotine smokers that we've been smoking, you know, for the last 11 years or so. But they really don't acknowledge the fact that there are these newer devices that really have only been out for a couple of years. And as a result, the nicotine users may develop these problems a little bit slower because A, they smoke at a little bit lower temperature, so they're not as impacted by the newer devices than THC or CBD users. And so a lot of them think, you know, they've been taking nicotine and they feel fine and they really don't have anything to worry about. And, you know, it's not really clear that that's the case. And, you know, some indirect evidence is there was a paper that was just studied, just published, I should say, that was studying, vaping, in mice. And what they found was kind of alarming, you know, that they exposed the mice to either vape from vaping with nicotine in it or just, smoke without nicotine was kind of their control. And, the mice did develop, lung cancer at a pretty high frequency, like a quarter of them or so. And they also develop hyperplasia because it's kind of a precancerous condition in their right. bladder. And so the numbers were pretty high. And in those cases, it didn't have anything to do with THC, and it didn't have anything to do with, you know, an oil base. They were essentially, you know, using the vaping more in line with what nicotine vapors use. And it was a pretty dramatic example. Now these are kind of experimental mice, and they are kind of designed to...
Experimental mice, that's a good one. Yeah, all right.
Well, they're bred that way. You know, so,
I got you.
So they're,
I know.
They're not wild mice, and they're bred so that they generally can show...
They're lab mice.
...cancer
I got
quicker.
It. Yeah, yeah.
Right. But they're a specific strain that is for... they'll generally develop cancer quicker than other strains, but they kind of control for that by, you know, using the same mice in the two groups, but one group's got the vape with nicotine, the other one just got smoke. And, relative, you know, one to the other, well, the ones that smoke in the time frame, which I think was, 6 months or so, you know, the ones who smoked didn't get any cancers, and the others were dramatically elevated. So that's an example of what the nicotine vape in and of itself can do. It's not like I said, they have a shorter lifetime and lifespan, and they have and they're kind of bred to kind of show these effects. But so it's not like people are going to develop cancer in 6 months. But, you know, the argument is that relative to cigarettes, vaping hasn't been around that long. And, you know, the fact that people have been doing it for 5-10 years, and not that many have been doing it for 10 years. I think a lot more have been doing it for 5 years. And they haven't developed anything yet. It's still on the early side. And these mice studies are suggesting that, you know, there is cause for concern. So, and then the ones that have been, you know, doing THC, they've been doing it at this higher temperature. And that's what the worry is you know, the deaths are a little bit on the alarming side. The numbers are a little bit low if you go week to week, but you're starting to get these kind of clusters of cases that are showing up, you know, like on a daily basis, which is quite a bit more dramatic than it was, you know, just a few weeks ago. There was one set that was written up with the first case in New York and the first case in Utah. And both of them happened within 24 hours of each other, and both of them were under 30. One was a 17-year-old I mentioned. The other one, they didn't give the age other than under 30. And they both were reported within 24 hours of each other. And they kind of focused on these two cases. But as it turns out, this was on Tuesday and Wednesday of this week. But between those two, Texas announced their first case and Georgia announced their second case. So they made a big deal that there were two cases within 24 hours of each other. And in reality, there were four cases within 24 hours of each other. And the Texas and the second Georgia case just didn't get that much coverage when it was initially announced, and it got a lot more coverage like the day after. So they wrote the article on the two cases and kind of ignored the other two, and they thought that was, you know, a big deal. But then today was, you know, they did the report, and they got up to 26 deaths. And the first case in Utah wasn't included. So there really were already 27 deaths. And like within an hour of... or maybe it's 2 hours of them releasing the data. Actually, they came one at a time. There was an announcement that there was a second case in Indiana. There had been one case fairly early on. And there had been a second case in Indiana. And then like 2 hours later, there was a third case in Indiana. So there were two cases announced in Indiana today. And so that's the first time there's been two deaths in one state announced at the same time. And actually, you know, that brought Indiana up to three, and they're tied with California. Those are the only two states that have three so far. But
right.
The numbers are starting to bump up on the death rates, and there's a few cases anywhere that are younger. The two youngest cases are these two that were written up just a couple of days ago. So again, it can be the leading edge that the initial cases that have been reported so far have been older. Some of them had underlying conditions, and they're the first ones that are going to show up. And then as you go along and you start getting into the younger cases where that's who's doing most of the vaping, and they're just showing up, you know, a couple of days ago. There's two cases that were both under 30. And that's in contrast to this average age, which is almost 50, is 49 and a half.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the deaths may be getting younger, and that's getting into the population that's doing most of the vaping. And then you got that compounded with the flu situation. Because you've had a bad situation in the southern hemisphere, there's predictions. There's already been at least one pediatric death already this season. And it's kind of foreshadowing that this may be a bad flu season. And so if the vaping group is starting to kind of edge higher now, so there's going to be more cases without any infections, and then people are going to, I mean, flu season, a reasonable percentage of the population is going to get the flu almost no matter what precautions they take. It is just, if they're exposed to a lot of people with the flu, you know, they could conceivably be exposed to, you know, round after round until they get a high enough level that they actually
all right,
come down
I got
with the flu resistance.
One more speculative question.
Okay.
Do we have any data on any of the injured parties or fatalities that would suggest that a relatively short-term vaping career could cause catastrophic results? A couple months, mm-hmm. 3-4 months? What's it look like? What do we have any? That's data that's probably not available.
I haven't seen that. There are some reports that have gone up on individual cases. One of you put up a couple of weeks ago that had eight different cases. They were generally all on the younger side. There was one mother of three who was, you know, I think probably in her 30s, and the rest were pretty much all teenagers. And they all seemed, I mean, they didn't give the number for each of them, but it seemed like the ones they did give the numbers, they had been smoking for, vaping for between 1.5 and 3 years. So I don't think there's a whole lot of examples of people that, you know, started vaping and a couple of weeks later they had pneumonia or
right.
Even
well, I'm trying to ask questions that
later,
I know
they had pneumonia.
Our listeners might be interested in hearing. So it's a very difficult situation. Not trying to scare anyone at all. I just want to try and cover all the bases.
But that is why it's so concerning, is that it does seem that there's got to be this type of a lag. And that's part of the reason I you know, zeroed in on this higher temperature, is that the epi curve is kind of consistent with that, that it's not people all of a sudden got sick as soon as vaping became popular. They got sick right. after they've been doing it for a couple of years. So there's a
right.
so there's a 2-year layout. So the numbers starting to go up a few months ago, you know, would be, you know, signaling some event that happened about 2 years ago or so, and that it took this long. But that's what is worrisome, is that, you know, a lot of people have been smoking for a year or two, and some, you know, I don't even know if it's some, it could be a lot, you know, don't really think that, it's a problem. I mean, there's the statements. I don't say that, I don't think there's any data, but there's certainly tweets out there that say, if you're smoking nicotine, you don't have to worry about it. It's not a problem. And, and this is all, you know, THC cases, and they are the majority. I mean, 87% of the whole group. And there's a little bit of regional differences. Some are up to about 90%, but some are closer to 80 or 70%. Are taking THC. And it's really unclear whether it's the additives that, you know, the cutting agents like the, vitamin E acetate are really a driving factor, because the vitamin E acetate isn't in all the cases, even it's not even in all the THC cases. And the study that was done at the Mayo Clinic kind of, they had 17, samples, and they were on the higher side. 29% of those were nicotine only, and they all essentially looked the same under the microscope. They said it was this chemical burn situation, and it didn't matter whether they were the nicotine only or if they were the THC. And like I said, a couple of them were over a year ago, and there wasn't that much cutting with THC back then. It wasn't, you know, as popular, and there really wasn't that much of a market. So, you know, it's more likely they would have had street or doctor types of compounds that mm-hmm. they were buying. Mm-hmm. And a couple of the people, like Oregon, they said they had bought from licensed stores. And those were two deaths in Oregon. And so it's less likely that those were contaminated than some of the street drugs. And the street drugs are probably more of a concern, that there's something in addition, but it's really unclear. And that's what part of the problem is that the reporting is so heterogeneous that you've got, you know, a lot of different products. And, you know, as I mentioned, there's some cutting back of this, but, I think, you could order from Amazon the empty cartridges. So you could buy the cartridges that are already printed in, you know, like Dank Vapes or whatever. I don't know.
Right. Okay.
So you can get the empty cartridge and put whatever you want in there and say, you know, and have it look like, whatever somebody else put in.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I believe Amazon has stopped, making those available. And that's why I said earlier, these Dank Vapes was the, in the study that was done with Wisconsin and Illinois, and that was the most popular version. And I also mentioned previously, it's about a third the price. And so, you know, it's real popular in part because it's not very expensive. And
right.
it's fairly common because, like I said, you can buy an empty cartridge. And so you have a lot of different people that are basically selling Dank Vapes, and, there's a whole range of what the composition of the Dank Vapes actually is. But, those are, the two states that got the early start. It turns out, Illinois actually moved up to number one. They just got their deaths up to, their cases up to 123. And they're actually the number one state in the country. So there's some regional differences on what people are actually vaping. But I'm anticipating that as we go in the next couple of months, that you're not going to see a decline in cases. It's going to go the other way. And when the flu season hits, I think there are going to be a higher ratio of deaths versus cases.
Decreased lung capacity, certainly more vulnerable to viral and bacterial infection. Not good.
We'll see. And not only getting the infection, but have the course of the infection be significantly worse, because when you're infected, you're not going to be able to handle that as well as if you're once were healthy. That's part of the reason, over 65 don't really do that well with flu, and younger people usually do if they bring you something weird like spine flu.
So we'll see
what happens. Flu season is starting, and we'll know in the next month or two.
Thank you for all the wisdom and factual presentation. We just leave it up to those who vape. Hopefully they're hearing this, or some of them are, and they can protect themselves however they choose to do it. But we recommend hold off until we find out what's going on here. All right. Thank you, Henry.
That sounds like good advice. Okay. Take care. Talk to you soon.
Dr. Henry Nyman. Okay, that's it for tonight. Back tomorrow. Good Lord, it's Friday already. Unbelievable. Talk to you tomorrow night. Take care. Thanks for being here. Be well.